This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivas. So the less understood than anorexia and bulimia, binge eating disorder, will soon receive an official diagnosis in the fifth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders in the US. And that is a standard reference book for mental health professionals scheduled to be released later this month. And with me to discuss binge eating is neuropsychologist Dr. Nivashini Mohan. Welcome to the show, Dr. Niva. It's
been ages
since we had you on.
It is.
You know, Dr. Niva, binge eating is joked about a bit during holiday seasons as a necessary evil. But aside from the humor of overeating, what is really, how would you describe binge eating?
Well, as you're aware of, you know, the Hari Raya holidays have just passed. And I'm sure everyone has been, you know, everyone can say, look, I ate too much and I've been binging and I've been pigging out. So all that is, you know, fun and games, and we do it occasionally. But in order to be diagnosed with a binge eating disorder, which is really exciting for psychologists, psychiatrists aside now, because of the DSM-5's we sort of introduced binge eating as a specific disorder in the DSM-5. Previously, it was under, you know, a smaller category of eating disorders, but now it's getting more attention as a specific disorder in its own. So how we actually characterize binge eating is that basically it's eating large volumes of food. Now, what differentiates binge eating from just, you know, holiday eating is how often we do it. You know, during holidays, it's probably, you know, the 3 days over the Hari Raya period.
Yeah.
But when it comes to binge eating, binge eaters generally do it more often. So I'll just read you some of the diagnostic criteria from the DSM-5, the new DSM-5 that's supposed to come out soon. In order to actually diagnose, you need eating in a discrete period of time, say within a 2-hour period. So most of us would eat, you know, what we consider normal amounts of food. But for binge eaters, they eat an amount of food that is definitely larger than most people would eat in that similar period of time. And I guess a key for binge eating is a sense of lack of control over the eating. So most of us eat and then we sort of feel full, or, you know, we finish our little portion and that's it.
Yeah.
But for binge eaters, they cannot control the eating. So they just compulsively sort of eat. And the binge eating episodes are actually controlled or associated with eating much more rapidly. So you're eating faster than normal, you know, wolfing down your food.
Yeah.
So you're not really enjoying
You don't taste the food at all.
Eating until you feel uncomfortably full. So like I said, most of us, it takes about 20 minutes for your body, for your brain to actually tell your body that I'm full. And most of us eat and then we realize, oops, I've eaten too much, I'm full. But for binge eaters, they actually don't get that feeling of fullness. And so they eat till a point of really, they just feel really uncomfortable. And that doesn't deter them from binge eating again, say later on during the day. And eating large amounts of food when they're actually not physically hungry. So they're just eating to feel a psychological need, say boredom, loneliness, depression. But they're not really eating to fulfill their hunger. And I guess another key for binge eating is eating alone. For most of us, like we said, during the festivities, during the holidays, the key to eating socially is we eat with other people. You know, we socialize. It's a way of interaction. But for binge eaters, they actually eat alone because they're often embarrassed about how much they're eating. So if they eat in front of their friends, people might say, you know, that's a lot, or you're eating really too fast.
How does it begin, Dr. Neva?
In terms of the triggers for binge eating disorders, there are very little known triggers of, you know, what actually starts binge eating. Psychologically, binge eating is thought of by many professionals to be a form of food addiction. So people get addicted to food, the taste of food, the texture of food.
We've had that discussion before. I mean, whether or not we can be addicted to food. You know?
I think you can. I mean, some people are addicted to certain types of food. Like for me, it would be chocolate. You know, you put chocolate in front of me, any form, I cannot say no. But this is you know, taking it a step beyond that. You're addicted to food in general. So it's not just a particular food group. I mean, it'd be great if people are addicted to just vegetables and you know, sort of eat that.
Then
we wouldn't consider it a disorder, right? But this is just food in general, you know, any sorts of food. So it doesn't really have to be tasty, or it doesn't have to be something they like. As long as there's food in front of binge eaters, they're happy to consume large amounts of it.
Could it be genetic in any way?
Yes, a lot of binge eating disorder has been linked to genetics. But then, you know, from a psychological point of view, that's just dismissing it as saying it's all in my genes. You know, I overeat because it's in my genes. So I think it's a bit of a simplistic explanation to binge eating.
Yeah.
However, there is a genetic component. I think people can be born with a predisposition to overeat. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's a lot of psychological factors that also trigger a binge eating episode or a disorder.
How prevalent would you say it is in Malaysia? Do you see many binge eaters?
I don't think we see many. I haven't seen any so far because a lot of people are unaware that it's a disorder to begin with. Like I said, it's only recently in this year, 2013, that it's been recognized as a disorder. So in terms of diagnosis, I'm sure a lot of people go undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't even know that what they're doing is actually binge eating. So in terms of prevalence, probably 1 to 3% of the population might be, you know, might actually fit into the diagnostic criteria mm-hmm. of having a binge eating disorder.
Right. Is it fair to say that everyone who's obese, for an example, could be a binge eater?
No, actually what we found is there are about 60% of binge eaters are obese, mm-hmm. but not the other way around. So you can be obese without actually binge eating. So there are other factors that play into obesity as well. You know, genetic factors or health factors, hormonal factors. But when it comes to binge eaters, 60% are obese and about 20% are overweight, which actually leads us to say that there are some people who are actually within the normal weight who might also binge eat.
How is that possible? Are they purging out what they are actually eating?
No, that's actually a crucial distinction between bulimia, anorexia and binge eating. Binge eaters actually do not purge. That's one of the diagnostic criterias. They do not purge. They do not excessive exercise. They do not fast. They do not have sort of inappropriate compensatory behaviors to their binge eating. Mm-hmm. So the act of binge eating itself is like a soothing coping mechanism for them. So they don't feel the need to sort of, you know, do anything to get rid of this temptation or compulsion.
Do women binge more than men?
Definitely.
Why?
Women, for some strange reason, I guess they, you know, it's an easy way. You know, when you think of food, it's not something like alcohol that in some countries can be hard to get your hands on, or it's not a prohibited substance like drugs. Food is easily available. It's cheap, especially in Malaysia. It's cheap. It's fast. You get it every corner. You know, and so people don't think of it as an addiction or they don't think of it as a substance as such. But for women, every 3 women to 2 men binge eat or have been diagnosed with a binge eating disorder. And I guess it's just an easier way to cope with emotional problems.
Right. And it's hard to get to the root of the problem. Am I correct?
Yes.
How do you do that?
I guess that's where therapy comes in. You know, it takes a lot of time and for you to actually do a lot of self-discovery, a lot of awareness of why you're actually binge eating to begin with, because people don't realize that they're binge eating. They think that's just normal. That's just how I am. And I mean, if you do it for about a couple of weeks, it becomes normal for you to eat large volumes of food, mm-hmm. you know. So, and every time, I think the media as well is you see TV. Every time there's a breakup, they go and get a pint of Ben and Jerry's or a pint of Haagen-Dazs.
Yes, exactly.
And that's something, you know, coping. So we learn to associate food with coping, especially when you're upset or distressed. And for binge eaters, that just becomes a norm. They do it on a daily basis.
Does it come with the need to keep up with an acceptable stereotype as far as the body is concerned?
I don't think so, because again, 60% of binge eaters are obese. Yep. So I don't think they're so much worried about their body image as with people with the other eating disorders.
Okay. We have a little clip from a male who tells his story about binge eating, and then we'll come back and find out more about the whole psychological shame and guilt kind of feeling.
My name is Adam. I'm from Seattle, Washington. 3 years ago, you know, I was 350 pounds. I had severe social anxiety. I wasn't doing anything with my life. I was avoiding friends, just filled with a lot of self-hate. Since a young age, I had issues with food, turning to it for emotional reasons. If I had depression, anxiety, stress, using food to numb that. My parents got divorced when I was 9 years old. We moved to a new town. It was hard to make friends. I remember turning to food as a friend.
We're discussing binge eating with Dr. Nivashini Mohan. She's a neuropsychologist. We're discussing binge eating. If you have a question for her, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000, or you can tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi with me, Dr. Nivashini Mohan. She's a neuropsychologist. We're discussing binge eating. Yes, Luther's actually texted in to see. I can hear knocking in the background. Is someone breaking down the wall? I apologize. We're trying to deal with the people upstairs.
Yes, we can hear it too.
It's almost, I feel like the wall is coming down. I feel like the floor is going to fall and the ceiling's going to fall on me. But, you know, when you talk about addicts, are binge eaters full of shame that, you know, afflicts many other addicts?
Again, it's hard to say, but in terms of the shame, most people deal with the shame, or most people with food or eating disorders deal with the shame by doing compensatory behaviors that we mentioned before. They purge, they fast, excessively exercise. But binge eaters are somehow a little different. They do have the shame and guilt. They know that it's wrong. They know that it's, but they're still tempted to do it. Mm-hmm. They're still, and they don't really do any of these compensatory behaviors as such.
Right. Okay. Is that worrying though?
I guess it is because, again, you know, it's harder for family to diagnose someone mm-hmm. with binge eating because it's done in secret. And because the person does not do these compensatory behaviors, people are not aware that this person is actually binge eating, besides the fact that they may be obese or overweight.
Okay. As you said earlier, you know, they eat without tasting, mm-hmm. right? So do you need then as a therapist or a neuropsychologist, do you need to teach them how to indulge in mindful eating?
Yes, I think that will be a key in terms of therapy. And one of the common therapies that we do for binge eating disorders would be cognitive behavior therapy. So we attack the problem via cognition. We help them become more aware of what they're doing, to begin to actually taste their food, probably to limit the time that they spend eating, not 2 hours or not eating really quickly, so to slow down. Mm-hmm. And through this, the person then becomes more aware of their actions and what is it they're actually doing. And by changing their cognition or their thinking process, their behavior, the actual eating behavior, actually changes.
Okay. Why is it some people tend to be drawn towards binge eating when it, you know, of course there's an underlying issue, but it manifests in certain types of behavior?
I guess it's different for everyone. Depends on what, you know, if you're exposed to, say, a lot of alcohol and you're used to alcohol, then alcohol would be your choice of drug. If you're used to smoking, then smoking would be. So for some people, food is just, like I said before, it's easily available, it's fast, it's cheap, it's everywhere, and you often don't think of it as an illicit substance, and so people just drawn to it. Another reason is that we also associate food with comfort, families, social events, especially in Malaysia. Every meeting is over, hey, let's go teh tarik, or you know, roti canai, or 3 a.m. in the morning there's some nasi lemak or nasi kandar available. And so once you start associating that with having friends and the social nature of it, let's say for example someone's depressed or lonely, you know, they lack that social interaction. So naturally, they sort of indirectly veer towards food mm-hmm. as a relief of those feelings.
Yeah. So it's an emotional escapism. Is that what I'm saying?
Somewhat, yes.
Escapism, yes, correct. So it is, but they don't realize the stressor.
Oftentimes it's very, like you said, people are unaware of it. So they don't realize what the trigger is. Mm-hmm. Or some of them may know the triggers, but like I said, if you're lonely and you're bored or you're depressed, you tend to veer towards food and mm-hmm. then it becomes habitual and then it happens on a daily basis. So, you know, if you're going to just have a pint of ice cream over one breakup for one episode, say once, that's okay. But if you're going to do it on a daily basis, then it becomes a problem.
Can it relapse after recovery?
Definitely. That's another problem with people with food addiction. There's nothing to stop you from going back to eating food. Yep. So cognitive behavior therapy actually addresses that. It actually helps you to recognize when you're relapsing and prevent, or for you to take preventive measures before you actually relapse.
Okay. More and more people are going in for gastric bypass surgery, Dr. Neva. Is this just a shortcut to treat binge eating, or when, as you said, the stressor is usually not known? Mm. If you don't identify the stressor, then how is a gastric bypass really going to help? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Gastric bypass would be a good treatment option for those who are obese or those who are overweight. Mm-hmm. But unless they treat the actual cause of the binge eating, then there's nothing to actually stop them from relapsing after the bypass. You know, you probably lose weight temporarily, and then as soon as you're stressed or there's another trigger or, you know, your issues are not resolved, mm-hmm. You still resort to food again. Unless you really practice, healthy lifestyle, unless you completely change your lifestyle, then maybe you can avoid having a relapse.
It is a psychiatric disorder.
It is a psychiatric disorder. Because it's in the DSM-5, mm-hmm. it's now being recognized as a full, an actual disorder.
Okay. How prevalent is binge eating among older people? Because when I was reading through, I mean, maybe not so much in this country, and I don't know, right? Mm. A lot of this information is only available online in, data on America and Europe and stuff. But there are quite a large number of older people who suffer from binge eating. Is there a reason for that?
I'm not really sure, actually, because, like I said, binge eating is a relatively new disorder. And so I suppose in the next few years, we get, you know, a lot of research coming out on binge eating. But in the past, it's been very underreported, unrecognized and undiagnosed. So the statistics and the research on binge eating, especially in the older population, would be definitely much underreported. Mm-hmm. Probably a reason why could be because they're bored, they're lonely, they've got more life issues, and they don't have work to distract them, which could lead them to actually binge eat more.
Were you happy that, you know, the whole idea of binge eating has become part of the DSM in
the
US?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, the DSM-5 has its controversies, and but the introduction of it as a specific disorder actually just raises the question that more and more people are obese, more and more people are binge eating, and for it to be recognized, I mean, of course, we've got its pros and cons. If more people are being diagnosed with binge eating, then probably more people will be actually put on medication. Not specifically for binge eating, but to help them deal with the depression or anxiety that goes with binge eating.
I've always been very against medication.
Yes.
And as a neuropsychologist, I suppose you do.
Not against medication. I mean, there are instances when you need to have, you know, medication, but especially in the US and overseas, medication is just being overprescribed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's for the wrong diagnosis or, you know, anyone, you go to a GP and they give you antidepressants, and that's just not the way that you deal with an issue, because medication is sort of a short-term relief. And in the long run, your problem is still there. You're just medicating the symptoms, but you're not actually addressing the root cause of any problem.
Sure. So your approach would be medication?
A combination. I would recommend a combination of medication and psychotherapy, or medication and counseling, or meditation and addressing the real cause of the issue, whichever avenue you may choose.
Okay. Lutz is also asking via text message, does hypnotherapy or regression help to understand where it is from to actually face the problem?
Yes, I think it can. I suppose a lot of people who are not aware of their problem can use hypnotherapy or regression as an effective way of uncovering where the triggers are for binge eating. So I suppose it is a good alternative way to actually uncover a lot of hidden or repressed feelings and emotions.
What's the most difficult thing I'm trying to get treated for binge eating?
I suppose the first step would be to actually recognize or acknowledge that you have a problem, mm-hmm. that binge eating has become out of control, that, you know...
When do you really know it has become out of control?
I suppose if you're eating alone and you don't want people to know that you're eating so much, and, that you actually binge eat, say, at least twice a week for 6 months, or it's a recurrent theme, you know, or you start missing work to binge eat. Or maybe you have really extended lunchtime, you know, alone or even with friends. You can actually binge eat with friends and laugh it off and say, you know, I'm really hungry today, I'm picking out. But then if it becomes a recurrent theme, then, you know, you've got a problem.
Okay. Do you think it's very prevalent in Malaysia? Is it something that's worrying?
I think it's going to be something that we have to deal with, especially with children. And it is a growing, if you look at developed countries, fast food and things like that all contribute to binge eating. You go to a restaurant and they say, ₱1, you supersize your meal. So with all these temptations around us, binge eating will definitely become a bigger problem mm-hmm. for us as a society.
Do you see it more prevalent amongst the younger people or middle-aged people?
Again, like I said, with the statistics on this, is very limited. So I would assume it's more with the younger people, just because they have lesser ways of coping with their stress, or they have less developed avenues for them to discuss their stress or their problems. And I'm seeing more and more young people coming in saying, I haven't got any friends, I haven't got anyone to talk to, I can't relate to my family. So with this breakdown in social support, mm-hmm.
You don't know how it's going to manifest.
Yes, and we don't know where they're going to turn for support.
Exactly. When you talk about people coming together to see you, are parents open to bringing their children, for an example, if they do recognize a problem?
Yes, I think Malaysians on a whole are getting more aware of psychological issues, and the stigma is slowly going away about coming to see a psychologist or a therapist or a psychiatrist even. And so that's a good sign. That's a positive sign. Parents are more willing to bring in their kids than to actually come in themselves. So they recognize problems in their children, but they're not so forthcoming when it comes to their own issues. But it's an encouraging trend.
Mm-hmm. Health consequences, Dr. Neva, for people who binge eat?
I suppose the health consequences, aside from those associated with obesity, in terms of psychologically speaking, a lot of those people with binge eating have been associated with having mental disorders like depression. anxiety and also substance use disorders. Mm-hmm. So there's been quite a strong link between these disorders and the tendency to binge eat.
Okay, what about sleeping disorders?
Again, from what we know about obesity, not so much binge eating. What we know about obesity is that lack of sleep or too much sleep can actually lead you to overeat or undereat. Mm-hmm. So sleep does or will play a big part in binge eating.
So how do you know that? Which one comes first?
I guess it's different for different people. Like if you look at depression, those who are depressed, for some people they tend to oversleep, and for some people they tend to not sleep at all. Mm-hmm. So it really varies according to individuals and how you deal with your depression.
Okay, because I'm just thinking whether the binge eating comes first or whether the sleeping disorder
like
comes
the chicken in. And the egg.
And still, neither is really the root cause of the problem.
Yes.
It's just a symptom, isn't it? Your final message, Dr. Neva, on binge eating.
I guess the final message would be for us to acknowledge binge eating as a disorder. That's been the first step. To be aware of what you're doing, to be aware of how much you're eating, where you're eating, when you're eating, and then to seek help if you know that you're having a problem or you suspect, you know, someone who has a problem. You know, don't be shy or embarrassed about it. There's nothing wrong with actually getting professional help.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Meera.
Dr. Nivashini Mohan, a neuropsychologist, on binge eating on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.